Hello and welcome to episode 79 of Speak Beastie for January 27, 2019. I'm Shannon.
I'm Elena.
And I'm Jennifer.
And we have a guest host today. Introduce yourself, Jennifer. Who are you? What's your house? What do you
Hi.
Do? Why are you here?
Who knows? I am on the Speak Beastie social media team, so you should totally check that out. Oh, I didn't actually introduce myself. That would help, wouldn't it? I'm Jennifer. I'm on the social media team. My Hogwarts house is my Hogwarts house is Ravenclaw, and my Overmorning house is Horned Serpent, which is like the same
yes.
thing, basically.
And she makes and shares the very best memes.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. It's so much fun. I also own a war shop, which is my muggle job.
That's cool.
I saw Crimes of Grindelwald 7 times, so I'm team hashtag loved Crimes of Grindelwald. Sorry.
I mean, but it's good.
Oh, please don't ever apologize for your enthusiasm. I'm just a cynical old lady.
Well, it's good that you've seen it 7 times, because I've only seen it once. Layla's seen it twice now. So
yeah, I definitely know what happens.
Yeah.
Can reenact it for you if you like.
I'm like,
this episode
there was a guy named Newt in it. It's been so long, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing, but I do.
When was the last time you were on, Shannon? Because
well, yeah,
for me it's been like
year,
84 years.
It's been like 2 months, I think. A month and a half. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Mine is like 8. Which, hi, listeners. Yes, I'm here. I haven't died.
Well, last episode I was on was right after the movie came out. So, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been on since maybe May of last year? No. I've been on at least one since then. But definitely not since the movie came out.
So, tell us how you felt about the movie.
There's emotions that I have concerning it, and they are very passionate emotions.
It's fine, we accept all emotions here.
I love Newt and Dumbledore, and I have lots of concerns with lots of other elements of the film. But I am holding out that the third one will be more to my standard of movie, is the nicest way that I can put it. But speaking of the third movie, it's a perfect segue into the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as $1 a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billywig's knees and how.
Yeah, so one of our big pieces of news, I'm going to do them in reverse order here. So filming of Fantastic Beasts 3 was actually pushed back to fall of this year. There's no confirmation of a reason why. The rumors are because Catherine is pregnant, which is adorable. And I did not know till I was reading this news. And yay, congratulations. And also because of bad box office reports for Crimes of Grindelwald is one of the other reasons that they're thinking it might have been pushed back. There's also rumors of a script doctor that have been flying about like the owls in Owl Post. That's what I'm holding out for, quite frankly. because I feel like there was a lot of really awesome stuff in Crimes of Grindelwald that just wasn't maybe necessarily executed as well as it could have been. So I think they could really benefit from the possibility of a script doctor. So we will see, to be determined.
I doubt that it's box office. I think Crimes of Grindelwald did fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty difficult for a J.K. Rowling attached movie to not do well. That's kind of the whole point.
Like, I don't.
It does seem pretty weird that they've not said why, though.
Yeah.
Because usually they announce it. If it was something as simple as, like, you know, the pregnancy or something, you'd have thought they'd have said. Seems a bit suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe that's just me.
I mean, it's a lot of times it's just scheduling conflicts, whether it's like Catherine's or just other people, you know, because a lot of these actors are on other big projects as well. So, you know, a lot of times with these bigger movies, they just keep getting pushed back for reasons like that. So I'm not too surprised.
Yeah, I wonder if like that means the release is going to be pushed back at all, but maybe not.
I hope not. We need answers.
Yeah.
So, in other news, Crimes of Grindelwald is also going to be released digitally on February 15th in the US, and then March 9th in the UK, and then it's going to be released on 4K, Blu-ray, and DVD on March 12th in the US and March 9th or 18th in the UK. And apparently there's going to be a Blu-ray and 4K combo pack, which will include digital downloads and an extended edition of the film. How do we feel about an extended edition?
First of all, I'm super bitter that Britain's getting it really late. Like, come on. Harry Potter's British and he gave us the film a month later.
That's true. You get the digital like a month later.
I mean, really.
It's so weird to me now that they have like a digital release date and then a DVD. Like, just put it out at the same time. Yeah, it's like so bizarre. There's literally, I just said like, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 different dates for the same movie's release. Like, it just seems really strange.
And especially like, why is your digital release date?
I'm excited for an extended one though.
Why is your digital release date different in different countries? Like, whatever.
Yeah, surely when it's digital, it's not that much different.
Yeah.
Just put it at the same place everywhere. Really weird.
It's like you just drop it on the same date, different time zones. It's not that weird.
But yeah, extended
edition. I mean, they released the film at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, theatrically.
Extended edition is interesting. I don't...
It is only extended by 7 minutes, though.
7 minutes?
That might be worth seeing for
me.
Not
a lot.
7 minutes.
But...
no.
I mean, still interesting. What is in those 7 minutes that they felt... weren't important enough to be in theaters, but is important enough to put.
Yeah, I mean, it's no Lord of the Rings extended edition or anything, but you know.
Yeah.
I know.
Those are the only versions I know. I don't even know. Only I don't even remember the basic editions, as I call them.
They did do extended ones. I know over here, anyway, they did extended ones of the first two Potters, and they were both about 10 minutes longer.
Yeah, but those cutscenes were all really cool.
And you did get a surprising amount of new stuff.
Yeah. But. I mean, 7 minutes, that could be like 2 or 3 scenes if they're really short. But what are those scenes? I want to know. They're going to get me to buy it. OMG, who knew?
That's how they get you.
Yeah. I think the ball scene was on the list, though.
Oh, yeah.
The which scene?
The one that we saw in the trailers.
With Lita.
The ball with Lita, and there was, I think that was
I
on the list.
I almost forgot about that thing.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting, and I'm sure we'll have a whole episode to talk about it in 2 months.
But yeah, so, what are those? Hoo-hoo. But we do have one piece of owl post for this week. So in this piece of owl post, we have a comment from Facebook that's in a reply to episode 77. We've had to trim it down a smidge, just a smidge, because it was a giant quote, but I'm going to read that off to you here. This is a quote from Sal. Okay, so firstly with Queenie, I totally agree with what you said about her. It made no sense that she was the only one that changed and went to the dark side. If anyone, she should have been the least likely, since in the first film she was so sweet and compassionate. She was the most caring of them all. Her personality changed completely in this film, and it made no sense whatsoever. It was like watching the whole other person and not Queenie. I really didn't like her by the end of the film, totally hated her. The way she spoke to Jacob and treated him, There's only one thing I'd slightly disagreed with you guys on, though, and that was Queenie's turning didn't really need too much of an explanation. Her joining was obvious. Okay, yeah, maybe they could have shown a bit with the tea dregs and the teacup to show that she had been forced, if that was really the case. But the rest of it was fine. It was already obvious that she was going to join Grindelwald, and I agree that she should have known what Grindelwald was like since she worked for Makuza. She knew his crimes and what sort of a person he was, so how was it she was so easily forgotten something like that? It makes no sense. Sal, you and I are on the same page.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, I hated her by the end of the movie, I'll say that. I found her character really interesting, really, but as a person. I do feel like I agree with Sal in that, like, in this movie, her joining, like, I didn't feel like it really needed more explanation in this movie. What I needed more explanation of was, like, what happened between these two movies.
Yeah, her character made such a 180. It's like, it was just completely inconsistent character writing. Like, she went from being this really smart, awesome person with all this agency to, like, oh, well, I just want to be with my man, and I'll do whatever it takes to be with my man. And I'm just like, really? Really, honey? Even join Nazis? Really?
Mm-hmm. When I was reading the, like, tie-in books of Crimes of Grindelwald, it said that Queenie did it because she was dating Jacob, and then Tina kind of disowned her, and then because Jacob was all that she had, she was like desperate to cling on to him. But that still doesn't really seem like Queenie to me. She was so sweet.
Well, it also doesn't seem that, but even that piece seems inconsistent, because Tina would not like disown her sister because she loved Jacob. Like, Tina liked Jacob too. She knew that it was like not legal for them to be together, but I don't foresee Tina having any kind of moral issues with them being together.
Although maybe when she was reinstated as an Aura, maybe she thought Queenie should stay within the law? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's... I wanted more of Tina and Queenie in Crimes of Grindelwald, just in general, but... because they did kind of mention this whole, like, oh, Tina kind of left Queenie, but it was, like, unclear to me in the movie how much Tina actually cared about the whole Queenie and Jacob thing. Because it was, like... okay, but Tina is gone because she's on a mission, not because she was like, I have to get away from Queenie. And then it was like, they just never interacted until Queenie was going to the dark side, basically.
Yeah, it was their characterization felt really weird.
And then she just like shouted her name.
Yeah, so it's like...
yeah, is that the only time they talk to each other in this movie? Is when they're yelling at each other?
Yeah.
Each other's names?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Oof. I think that's just it. She yells Queenie, and that's the only interaction they have.
Yeah.
Even though they're in the same room for, like, so long.
Oh, my God. Talk about failing the Bechdel test.
Well,
and I mean, yeah. if we missed out so much in those 3 months, between those films, it's got to be a jump for the third one. We're going to miss out even more stuff, surely.
Yeah, I really don't know how they're going to play that, because she just doesn't seem like the kind of character that would go dark side, like, at all. And it felt really disjointed for them to do that.
I think it almost would have made more sense if this movie had jumped further in time. It would have, but still been, like, the same plot. Like, it would have been more believable to me that she has had a bigger change if it had been, like, a year or two.
But yeah, it's only been a couple months, right?
Yeah. That makes
sense. So.
Yeah, I think it's, like, 3 months or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's 3 months. So it's very weird.
Well, yeah. So, yeah. Thanks for that, Sal.
All right. Let's get into the main discussion.
Here we go.
So, today, we're going to talk about Queenie, actually. We're going to talk about her more. We wanted to talk a little bit about, like, how various characters present as mentally disabled, or, I mean, physically disabled, or mentally ill, and kind of the coding in there.
But Shannon, what's coding?
Yeah, I just, you know, used the word coding, and then Jennifer was like, what does that mean? I was like, oh. Yeah. I guess some people don't know. So coding is basically when a character is written intentionally or not intentionally to kind of be something. So you'll hear it a lot in discussions of, like, a character seeming to be gay, but they're not explicitly stated to be gay. It's like they're coded that way. and the writer might not have even...
Cough, Dumbledore, cough.
Yeah, Dumbledore. Joe obviously said that Dumbledore is gay, so, like, that was intentional, but sometimes those things aren't intentional. Comes up a lot with, like, mental health stuff, because people will write something a certain way and don't necessarily even think, like, with Newt, we're going to talk about, obviously. I don't know if Joe necessarily thought, oh, I'm writing Newt as autistic, but he comes across that way because... I'm sure she has encountered autistic people and possibly was like, Newt's kind of like these people, and didn't necessarily consciously think, oh, it's because he's autistic. But people have picked up on that coding. So examples from like Harry Potter itself is, I think Jennifer, you put this in here, Dementors represent depression.
Yeah, that was the first thing I thought.
Yeah. And like Joe did that on purpose. Coding as a term is used a lot to talk about bad representation and things, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I think the Dementors are a strong, important metaphor.
It kind of reminds me of how she had stated that, like, Lupin was kind of, like, coded as a stand-in for HIV and people with AIDS, just in the way that he's treated.
A lot of times coding, I think, works better in, like, more children's-oriented media because it's, like, you're not going to be able to explain the, you know, depression in-depthly to a child, but they can understand, like, Dementors are bad and make people feel sad, you know? So that's what coding is. The more you know. The first character I have in here is Newt, of course. I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time on Newt because we've talked about him a lot. But
he's the best part.
Of course.
I know, he is. So this episode's about Newt.
I have a massive cardboard cutout next to me.
Oh my god.
A 2-hour special on all the reasons that Elena loves Newt.
I love him so much. So of course, Newt as a character like comes across as very autistic. Eddie said, like right after the last movie came out, that he views Newt as autistic and that's how he plays him. So Newt is an example of... Like, I don't necessarily think Joe meant to write him as autistic, but he very much comes across that way. And even if she did, it can't really be confirmed in the canon because it wasn't a diagnosis at the time. But
true. Didn't even think about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like, autistic people would have existed, but there was no term for it. So it's like...
When was autism discovered, then?
Let me look it up real quick.
Is there, like, a date?
I meant to look it up before, but then I forgot.
I hadn't thought of that. That's a really good point.
Yeah. It was in 1943 that it was used as a diagnostic term. So.
Ah, so by the last movie, we can confirm that Newt is.
Yeah. Yeah. Just slip that in there.
Yeah, in the epilogue for the final film.
Yeah,
the epilogue. I'm going to be honest. If we don't get an epilogue with, like, oh gosh, Ivana Lynch... And, like, Newt's grandkids, I'm gonna riot.
And Eddie Redmayne dressed up as an old man.
That would be so cool.
Eddie Redmayne can what?
Dressed as an old man.
Yeah.
But he's wearing that same coat.
Yeah.
He'd still be beautiful.
Yeah.
A precious nugget.
So, yeah, Newt, I think it's a really good example of, like, so the thing with, like, representation is I think it's always better if you can say in the thing he's autistic, but you can't in this case. And I think he's a good bit of representation either way. Newt is a character who stays consistent through the two films.
I'd say that the Niffler has some pretty consistent characterization.
Yeah. You really understand the Niffler's goals, what the Niffler wants, you know? And that's important to any character, the want. And the Niffler wants shiny things.
Same, bro.
Yeah, I was going to say, who doesn't? Like, but yeah, that's Newt. I don't know if you guys have any other comments about Newt. It's like I said,
I mean, he's
we've
pretty great
about him a lot.
Not really. We just all love
him. Yeah, like
deeply.
I relate to his being scared of an office job very intensely.
Yeah. I relate to everything about Newt. You know what I wish this movie had more of? Beasts. But anyway, that's a different podcast.
An episode for another day.
At least they had some.
Yeah.
I mean, they made the Fantastic Beasts in the title smaller.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and talk about Queenie again.
You'll be able to see it by the next film.
So Queenie is super interesting when it comes to, like, metaphors for mental illness. And I didn't think about this until watching Crimes of Grindelwald. This was one of the, like, most interesting things about Crimes of Grindelwald for me. Because in the first film, her occlumency, legilimency, I forget which word.
Legilimency.
That's what I thought. So her legilimency is very much treated as, like, a gift. And it says that, like, she can't control it. She just kind of just reads people's minds, whether she wants to or not. But it's in the first movie, it's not really like a big deal. It's just kind of like it happens. It's kind of funny sometimes. But I really like how Crimes of Grindelwald actually shows how it can be a problem, not only for her to deal with, but like the thing with Jacob where he thinks she's crazy and she is. But anyway, and she like freaks out about it. That's another thing where I felt that her freaking out about like hearing him think something was weird, because she would have all her life been hearing people think things that then they were like, ah, I don't really mean that. You know, you think things all the time that you don't really mean.
Well, and doesn't she also, like, she says to him, like, you know, go ahead, say it. And it's like, why? You no. know. Well, like, yeah. Why would you, like, want to punish yourself like that and have him say it out loud when you can already hear that he's thinking it?
Yeah. And then he says it at the end because she is crazy. In this movie, in the first movie, she's a beautiful angel and nobody touch her. In this movie, bye. But
girl, bye.
Bye. But so the big scene in Crimes of Grindelwald where this really comes up is where she's on the street in Paris and she's just hearing so many people and she's by herself. She doesn't have anything to ground her and she's getting like really overwhelmed. And they show that to the audience more in this movie because they actually have us, like, hear what she's hearing, which is an odd switch from the first movie, but...
Well, I can't remember who was talking about it, if it was an article I was reading or if it was, like, in one of our chats after the movie came out. But somebody made the really good point of mentioning that part of the reason that she's, like, so, you know, stressed with the trademark symbol in that scene is because all the voices that she's hearing are a different language.
Yeah.
And so it's just this, like, cacophony of sounds that she doesn't even understand. Like, yeah. English is a language that she can kind of drown out easier because she understands it. So she's like, eh, whatever, you know, bye, Felicia. But because now it's just all these sounds that she doesn't know what they mean.
Yeah.
That could be something that increases why she's, like, so freaking out about it.
Yeah.
In the film, though, it was... It does also. It is all English that, that you hear her hair inside her
head.
Oh,
wait, shoot, is it?
But in the script, it says it's French, yeah. Which I thought was odd. Yeah.
I think, that's what I thought. I thought that I had heard that, like, it was confirmed in script that it's it was really French, but that in the movie it was English. Yeah, it is really weird.
That just, wow, I didn't even like catch English, that. Yeah. Strike that, reverse it.
Because then you don't even realize why it's affecting her so much.
I mean, I think it's still valid for it to affect her a lot, even if it is in English.
Because she's also a lot more stressed out right now.
Yeah.
Like, just given the circumstances.
I have to imagine that, like, really judging by her in the first movie, I don't feel like she goes out a lot. Like,
yeah.
I don't feel like she's spending a lot of time walking around New York City.
Do any of us?
Yeah, right? Same, Queenie.
Wow.
I love to just get dressed up and look nice and sit in my home. Like, that's the ideal.
Living your very best life.
But I also think that there's something to be said of, like, if she is out in the world, she's usually with someone, whether that be Tina or Jacob. And then that would be something to ground her more in the moment, in her own head or in that person's head, and not get distracted by other people. And that's where I kind of think it is a parallel to various mental health issues, where it's like some things are just easier to do if you have another person with you.
Yeah.
I think that scene in Crimes of Grindelwald very much like looks like an anxiety attack.
Yep.
And one of the things,
having had them, can attest.
Yeah, and like, it's clear that she starts to come down from the anxiety attack when someone approaches her, even though that someone is evil, but...
Well, yeah, that was like even, that's kind of like one of the notes that I had was I feel like this kind of arc that they give her in this movie where it's like this turning to the dark side is almost kind of like what it feels like when somebody who does have mental health concerns like ignores the people that are closest to them
Yeah.
Just because I know that, like, whenever I've had something where, like, I'm going through a really hard time, like, I have a tendency to push away the people closest to me, which just makes it worse. But it's something that just, like, when you're in that state of mind, you, like, you're not thinking properly, you know? And so it's kind of like, you think, oh, yeah, I should just push myself away from these people because they don't care, but that's what ends up making it hurt worse.
Yeah.
So I felt like that was something I strongly that's related to with, like, what she goes through in this film.
Yeah, I like that. Something that I think I brought this up on another episode is I was wondering if, it's Rosier, right? The woman?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering if she and Grindelwald know legitimacy and occlumency, if that, because in the moment when, like, she puts her hand on Queenie's shoulder, I interpreted that as she is, like, quieting Queenie's mind. That was my immediate thought. But then that wasn't really said in the film. So
yeah, that's what I thought as well.
Yeah, so I was like, maybe that's not it. But I think that makes sense. And I also think, like, that also makes sense as to why Queenie wouldn't see that Grindelwald is terrible, because he's hiding thoughts. But I could see her being like,
she didn't know the whole plan. Yeah. Then
she'd be like, oh, he wants to kill everyone. So bye.
that sounds like an excellent plan.
Yeah. But also maybe she recognizes in them, like, oh, they have this thing that's kind of like me. I can connect to them in a way that I can't connect to my sister or my boyfriend who I gave a love potion to.
Ugh. Oh my God. Watching that scene for a second time, just cringe for days.
But yeah, she's like, oh, these people understand my plight in a way that others don't. And I think that's something else that mentally ill people can fall into. Like, not that, oh, you should ignore people who are like you and understand your mental illness, but sometimes that can be taken advantage of.
Very true.
Yeah. So Queenie is very interesting. And she should stop being evil.
Yeah.
I know. Agreed. That, like, she's not evil, but, like, you know what I mean?
She's making evil decisions.
Yeah, and now Grindelwald has a mind reader on his side. Ugh.
Yeah.
Queenie.
It's like, I feel like with Queenie, I feel like a parent where I'm like, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So that's Queenie. So the next person I have on here is Credence. So something interesting with, like, Newt and Queenie is, they are the way that they are just, like, from birth. Queenie naturally is a Legilimens, and obviously Newt, if you interpret him as autistic, then that's just something that you're born with. But it has nothing to do with, like, how they were raised. It's nature, not nurture. Credence is interesting because he was raised really badly. To put it lightly.
To say it lightly.
Yeah. So we can't know exactly, like, what his nature would have been versus how he has become because of nurture. I think that he is heavily coded as autistic in a different way from Newt. But I also don't like to compare, like, the Obscurus to autism, because the Obscurus is, like, really bad and, like, causes him to kill people. And that's not what autism is, but as an autistic person, that's what I can pick up with Credence, just in the way he acts. But I think I've definitely heard of people interpreting Credence as, like, metaphors for various other mental disabilities or illnesses. I put in here that the Obscurus outbursts are comparable to panic attacks, just like Queenie's little thing with the voices.
Yeah, the way that he, like, explodes and then implodes and then like, explodes again, it just very much, it felt like a visualization of what an anxiety attack feels like.
Yeah.
So.
And for me, like, I
definitely see that.
I can also compare it to autistic meltdowns, where you just kind of lose control of your emotions. But again, I don't like the Obscurus necessarily being compared to that. But yeah, it's interesting because, so he wasn't born as an Obscurus, obviously. It's not how the Obscurus works. So the Obscurus was developed because he was abused and repressed his magical powers. And I think there's something to be said there about him having, like, PTSD. I don't know as much about PTSD as anxiety and autism, but I'm sure there would be comparisons in how he acts to that. And then I think,
yeah, because a lot of like PTSD really revolves around like reliving like certain things that have happened to you, and so it's like whenever he's confronted with things that he's been confronted with in the past, it kind of like triggers him in that way.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, PTSD and anxiety go hand in hand, to be honest. Like, I don't think many people with PTSD would be like, oh yeah, but I don't get anxious.
Like, yeah.
And then I think,
well, because you're constantly concerned that like the thing that triggers you is going to be something that happens to you. So it's like anxiety's kind of just like goes right with it.
Yeah. Even if you know you're safe, that's just what anxiety is. Jennifer, I think you put this point in here about what Ezra said. You want to read that?
Yeah, in the special features for the first film, he mentions that the Obscurus is, he kind of talks of it as, I always thought it was something that someone just kind of built inside themselves, but he talks of it as like an entity that, that comes to the child as a friend and like wants to know all their secrets and stuff. Sounds very creepy. And like encouraging the child to allow them to let its power run through them. So I thought that sounded a bit like depression, like the way it was kind of latching on to them and wanting to know everything about them, and it just sounded really creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Obscurus, especially the way it was presented in the first film, like as somebody who has depression, was like metaphors for days.
Yeah, like the Obscurus can be a metaphor for so many things, honestly. But it's funny, just now while you were reading that, I really realized like how that whole description, like, oh, coming to them as a friend, wanting to know secrets and encourage them, that I was like, but that's Grindelwald. Like,
oh no.
Grindelwald and the Obscurus are like the same in that way, which is bad.
Well, Grindelwald makes me pretty depressed, so I would say that checks out.
Yeah. Well, and it's gonna be
maybe he's Obscurus himself.
Whoa, you heard it here first.
Grindelwald is just an Obscurus who made
hashtag Grindelwald became a person.
What? But no, I love that as being a metaphor for depression. It's going to be really interesting to have Credence now with Grindelwald, because Grindelwald is going to encourage him to use the Obscurus to do bad things. And so in the same way with like what I was just saying about Queenie, it's kind of like Grindelwald is going to take advantage of this thing. What I would really love to see from Credence is for him to like learn to control the Obscurus and kind of come to accept it as part of him and not die. But
yeah, that'd be dope.
And I feel that way so strongly because I see these parallels to mental illness, and I just don't want it to become, well, the mentally ill person has to die because can't, you know. Deal.
From the trailer, one of the first trailers, it did look, when he was like shooting out of his hand, it looked like he had quite a lot of control over it, but then it was never mentioned.
Yeah, because you didn't see that scene in the movie. That should be in the extended
I'm not sure if he does, or...
Yeah, we would not like bury your neurodivergence to be a new trend.
Yeah, and maybe that's why they cut that scene out, is they decided they didn't know, they didn't want to decide how much control over it he has. But I mean, he wasn't like having an outburst and killing people every 5 minutes in this movie, so
yeah
too many people died in this movie. I'm just gonna say it,
a lot of people died in this movie. A lot of people died in the first movie, to be quite honest. Okay, not a lot, but like you did see
when I was watching,
a baby died in this one.
Yeah,
though.
Baby died, guys, a baby
yeah
died
when I was
this
watching
movie.
This the second
two
time,
babies
that baby died less than 20 minutes into the movie.
God.
And it just put a bad taste in my mouth the whole rest of the film.
I was like, they just killed a baby.
That's like the number one rule. Like, you don't kill the kids.
Don't kill the kids, and you don't kill animals. So I'm watching
all the
you,
animals,
Jill.
And they killed a chupacabra in like the first 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Wait. Yeah. Yeah. What's his name? The little guy.
What was, like Anthony?
Oh yeah.
Chupacabra. Just threw him out the window.
Justice for that little guy.
He'll be fine. We didn't see him. We didn't see what happened to him. He's gonna come back.
True.
With
maybe
vengeance.
He flies. He definitely flies.
Matter of weight, you don't know.
Headcanon accepted.
Yeah, he flies, and movie 5, he's gonna suddenly show up like the Ford Anglia
With the baby.
Or like the eagles in Lord of the Rings.
With a baby on
Antony
his back.
Antony just swoops in and stops Grindelwald.
And it's going to be like, whoa, we could have flown here on a chupacabra the whole time.
I want that on a t-shirt.
New merch.
Oh, Shannon, how I've missed you.
But yeah, the Obscurus. It's going to be interesting how that kind of develops. And it's like, it's very much a clear metaphor for some sort of neurodivergency. But it's weird to make it as clear of a metaphor, I think, as like Queenie's powers, because it is this thing that developed and now is not really a good thing to have. I wonder if it would be possible for, like, I don't know, it's so interesting because it's like, it's been established that Credence is like the longest living Obscurus. And so we don't know how this can develop. Like, could it get to a point where he just has regular magical powers and the Obscurial just doesn't exist anymore, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. But that gets...
Yeah, he did get a wand, which might make a difference
as
well.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, yeah, this is the first time he's had a wand.
He's harnessing his power now.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think that that's possible, but I don't know. It'd be interesting to see it. I also don't know how I feel when drawing parallels to neurodivergency, if it's then like, but he can be cured. See, yeah. But like, it's, yeah, that's why Credence is a very interesting metaphor.
I feel like this whole movie is just like, everything you love is problematic.
Like, I mean, that's true for everything. Everything you love is problematic. There is no ethical consumption under capitalism. But.
Amen. Hallelujah.
Do you guys watch The Good Place?
I do.
Yeah. Jennifer, you should watch The Good Place.
No, sorry.
It's a good show.
Oh, do yourself a favor.
Okay, so.
Joe is a gift.
Moving on. Next up, we got Nagini. Nagini, I think, Jennifer, you put this note in here that she reminds you of Lupin in, like, her condition.
Definitely, yeah.
Because her, so, I think she can be compared, and, like, I'm not as familiar as with more, like, physical conditions, but I think she could definitely be compared to, like, various incurable conditions that people have that eventually, like, result in their death or, like, loss of mind, like, maybe Alzheimer's. It's not a perfect comparison, but stuff like that. Because it is very much like she has this blood curse. She's going to become a snake someday. Nothing you can do about it. And we as the audience know that, yeah, there is nothing we can do about it that's going to happen.
Well, I think that's what bugged me so much is that, like, she was a character who had all this potential to, like, really explore, like, some deep character stuff, like, to really delve into, like, how this condition affects her as a person. And she just, like, the opportunity was just completely wasted. Like, we don't really get any insight from her. Like, the most characterization I feel like she has is at the end when she's begging Credence to stay.
Yeah.
And it just is like, you have this character who has so much potential to, you know, be representation on multiple fronts, not only because of, like, you know, her ethnicity and everything, but because of this, like, being a stand-in for these disabilities. Like, she could have done so much more, and it just feels like missed opportunities.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that they kind of...
I think there just wasn't enough space for it. I think it did... The film did kind of want her to have a bigger part, but it was doing a lot. There just wasn't the space. Hopefully we'll see her more in the next one.
Yeah, that's... I'm really hoping that, like, she's going to be developed more, because it... In this movie, I think we've said this in previous episodes, but it felt very much like she was just there as a person for Credence to talk to, because he needed someone to talk to just so that the audience knew what was going on and stuff, and he needed a friend. But since at the end she doesn't go with him, then that's not her function in the story anymore. So if they keep her around, which she was there in the last scene with everyone on the bridge, so it felt kind of like they would keep her around. And also, if you're going to introduce Nagini as a character, why would you then be like, eh? But she's going to go off and not be in the movies anymore. But,
it's like, oops, she's a snake now.
Yeah, so it feels like they should definitely explore her character more.
Yeah, I hope that they do that more. It's, and it just, because you're totally right, like, there really wasn't time, but it also just feels like This movie reminded me a lot of Prisoner of Azkaban. Because I'm just like, things that were included didn't need to be there, and things that should have been answered weren't.
Marauders.
And so it felt like too many movies crammed into one with not enough of the things that could have been explored getting explored. So it was just this weird...
Yeah.
I don't even know.
I also...
Dumbledore can't meet her, though, can he? Because he doesn't know that she's a snake, that she's a woman in the later ones. So if Dumbledore's in the other ones quite a lot, maybe she's not?
I guess we don't know for sure that he doesn't know.
Unless he meets her, but he doesn't know her name.
Oh, that's an interesting point.
She goes by Nags.
Or maybe he does know, but he's...
Yeah,
there's nothing he can do about it because she's a snake now.
See, and that's another thing where it's like, okay, you can definitely compare it to real life conditions, but then it's like, but no real life condition turns you into an immortal snake.
A snake.
And then you're just evil.
I mean, Shannon, you don't know what some people go through.
I just feel... If anyone out there identifies with Nagini's condition, like, I started this as a joke, but also, like, for real, if you, like... have a more strong parallel than what we can come up with, I'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, please, okay. Please share.
Do you think, okay, assuming like Nagini sticks around, do you think we're gonna see her like permanently become a snake?
I hope so.
I think it'd be a missed opportunity if we did.
Yeah.
I don't see why they would introduce her if they were gonna be like, well, guess she's off to, you know, do whatever now.
I've read some people say that like the last scene should be her meeting Voldemort in... Where is he? Oh, man.
Ooh.
I want to say Romania, but I think that's
Albania.
Right. Albania, that's it. And I think that would be really cool.
That would be cool. On the other hand, I also think it would be cool to see her not become a snake at the end, and she's just like, I'm going to go off and live the happiest life I can.
In Albania.
In Albania. And we're all like, no!
I mean, I'm not going to lie, I wouldn't mind that. Because then we can at least trick ourselves into feeling like she gets a happy ending.
Yeah. It's like she's one of these interesting characters because we know that Newt lives happily ever after. We don't know what happens to Queenie and Credence necessarily, but it's not going well right now. But we know what happens to Nagini, and she becomes a snake and Neville kills her. So like,
I just know if they hurt Jacob, then I am grabbing a torch and pitchfork. And
no,
it's
Jacob
all
has to. Jacob has to make it through these movies.
Yeah, I would have thought so.
Jacob didn't go through World War One and start his bakery to die.
And I mean, he is basically in the films to be us, isn't he? He's the Muggle seeing it through his eyes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he does die, I'd be super mad. We should just set Megan on Warner Brothers again.
Her killing the audience stand-in wouldn't be... I feel like that would be pretty indicative of our relationship with her.
I killed an animal, I killed a baby, and I'll kill you too.
Shannon, I love you so much.
Thank you. I'll be here for the rest of this episode. And for another 10 years.
And then I have a life to go live. No, this show is life.
FB is life. Okay, so the last person I have on here is Lita.
Oh, Lita.
And I think some people might be surprised to hear me mention Lita. I don't think she's necessarily, if you're thinking about disability, neurodivergency metaphors, she's not the first person you think of. But
are you kidding? She goes through so much traumatic stuff in this movie.
I mean, she goes through... I mean, this is another thing, going back to, like, trauma. She goes through a lot of shit throughout her whole life. And we see her, like, as a child, and obviously she doesn't fit in with other children. She feels much more comfortable with Newt. So I feel like there's definitely something to be said about her, like, always having some sort of mental illness, but... definitely, you know, by the time she kills a baby, she becomes very guilt-ridden and, like, she's not happy in this movie. She's never happy for, like, a second. Because,
actually,
like,
there's one shot in which she smiles, and it's when she's in the newspaper clipping.
Doesn't she smile at Pickett when the thing rolls, the button rolls across the floor? Sorry, I've seen this film too many times.
Maybe. You see this film more than us, so
no,
we're not going to have the answer.
No, you probably know better than either of us.
Because, like, it zoomed really close on her face.
She definitely can experience
happiness.
I mean,
I know if I was going to smile at anything, it would be Pickett the Bow Truckle.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But Lita definitely strikes me as, like, having depression, whether it be because of just that's, she's always had depression, or because her whole life has been terrible. Who's to say? But
yeah, she definitely, like, having just recently rewatched it, she's totally coded with depression.
Maybe
yeah.
even, like, survivor's
level.
Guilt or something as
Which
well.
Which is also a thing that you...
Because she mm-hmm. obviously feels really guilty.
What was that?
Maybe she's got survivor's guilt as well, because obviously oh, she yeah. feels super guilty that she yes. accidentally killed that baby, but she survived that experience.
And depression is also a thing that, like, you wouldn't have been diagnosed with.
Oh, yeah. They'd have just checked you in the asylum and...
Yeah, or it'd be like, you have womanly
hysteria.
Problems.
Yeah, women's hysteria.
Yeah, hysteria.
Yeah.
That was the thing at the time.
Yeah, so it's just like, she's a lady. Of course she's depressed. And I, honestly, I mean, I said this about autism, but also, like, anxiety. A lot of these things wouldn't have been diagnosed properly at this time.
Yeah, I mean, we barely are able to handle people with these mental health diagnoses now, like, the way that,
yeah.
you know.
And even if they would have been diagnosed, you know, in the 40s, they're mostly, people are mostly diagnosed with things when they're children, unless it's, like, something that, like, a physical illness.
Or that, something you know. That's, like, developed later in life.
Yeah.
But even like, then, you usually don't get, like, around that time anyway, you didn't, like... Like, Lita wasn't about to go sign up to go see a therapist at that time.
Yeah. So it's like, even if, like, the proper diagnosis would have come about during her life, she probably wouldn't have gotten it. Same with Newt. Yeah. But she... So that's... With Lita dying, that's the beginning of, like, please don't bury our neurodivergence.
Yeah. Seconded that.
Yeah. Because she could have been so interesting. I mean, she was
she
interesting
been
in this
somebody.
Movie, but she could have been even more interesting. Who did she say I love you to? Oh.
Yeah, that I'm never recovering from.
Pretty sure she said it to both of them. That's my headcanon. She loved them both.
Yeah.
Platonically and or romantically. It's cool, guys.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just some characters that I think can... be interpreted as neurodivergent, and I love them, and they're all my babies. They belong.
But we really
want to
get some help for Queenie.
We really like
you need help, girl.
One,
Queenie,
you know,
sweetie, we're worried, sweetie.
And then that's another thing to talk about is like I don't think Newt necessarily needs constant treatment. Like, not all autistic people do. Like, Newt seems pretty cool with himself. Like, obviously, he's like, other people don't like me. And I, like, he's not happy about that. But he's accepted who he is.
Yeah.
And he, you know, gets along with the people he gets along with. Now, Queenie definitely should get some help. Lita definitely needed help her whole life. Gosh. Credence obviously needs help. That's, like, the whole plot of the movies. It's just like, someone please, God, help Credence.
Help this sweet, sweet boy.
Well, then, you know, obviously we know Nagini's gonna become a snake, but, like, for example, compare her to Lupin. Lupin's gonna be a werewolf his whole life, but we know that there's a potion that he can take that helps him out during his time of the month, you know? Maybe there's some sort of treatment that Nagini could get to... make her life a little bit easier, less painful.
Wouldn't that be nice?
But she's not in a position to get that right now.
Yeah, I just want nice things for Nagini.
Yeah.
And for Queenie. And for all these precious babies.
I'd just like Nagini to, like, live a happy life before she becomes a snake.
It does a croissant.
Yes. For,
like, let that be the footnote of her life.
Yeah.
I like that we went in to Crimes of Grindelwald, like, ready to hate Lita and Nagini, and came out just like, don't touch them.
Yeah.
Apart from Lita, because, I mean, she died.
Like, protect
still.
My precious babies. Don't look at them
yeah.
wrong.
We will fight you.
It's okay, she didn't die. She's the phoenix. She's gonna rise from the ashes.
Yeah, I mean, she turned into dust, so,
don't
I mean...
Don't even at us.
Yeah, she might be
I mean,
fine.
That would actually be amazing if Lita, like, pulled a phoenix and was not dead.
JK.
I don't think that's gonna happen, but...
I mean, I'd be here for it.
Yep, so you guys got any other points to add?
Nope,
I think we covered it.
Thank you for joining me on this journey.
That was a great chat.
Now let's go into the time turner. Woo!
Yay!
I guess you don't go into the time turner. So Jennifer suggested this. The War of the Worlds.
I think it's hilarious.
It is. So we're not...
It's so great.
I'm sure most people have heard of this. The War of the Worlds radio drama. So it was broadcast on Halloween night, 1938. Spooky. Directed and narrated by Orson Welles on CBS Radio. And it was adapted from the 1898 novel War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells. No relation to Orson Welles.
That always used to confuse me so much in history class. I was like, which one is which?
Their names are spelled different, if that helps. Wells, Orson Welles has two E's in it. H.G. Wells has one E. So basically, War of the Worlds is a book about Martians taking over the world. Yeah, there's been some movie adaptations. You may have seen them. So for his radio presentation of this, Orson Welles updated it to take place in 1939, although it was being broadcast in 38, he utilized real American cities so as to be more accessible to the American audience because...
Boy, was it accessible.
It was accessible because the original book took place in Europe and it utilized real European cities. So Orson Welles wanted to find a way to adapt it to an American audience. It was only a 1-hour program, part of an anthology series on CBS Radio, the Mercury Theater on the Air, which was not a very popular program. Things changed.
I see. Sci-fi did not get its respect back in the day either.
So it's a 1-hour program at the top of the hour. They introduced it as an adaptation. I think they made a couple announcements before the top of the hour, too, being like, tonight we're going to do an adaptation of War of the Worlds. And Orson Welles read out loud a prologue at the beginning of the hour that's similar to the prologue at the beginning of the book. So they made it clear beforehand that it was a fictional thing, but so here's...
That would require people to pay attention.
And to be listening at the beginning. It's not like modern day where you listen to your podcast and you load it up or you turn on the TV and you rewind. So the first half hour, so this is why, this was so famously, misunderstood. The first half hour of the program was presented as normal radio programming. Like, they had music, they had like regular news stuff, but it would be occasionally interrupted by these quote-unquote news bulletins describing this escalation of a Martian attack. So there was like, oh, scientists have noticed some strange explosions on Mars recently, a weird cylindrical object has landed in New Jersey. And then they were live.
Martians.
Then they were live from New Jersey investigating the cylindrical object when suddenly Martians came out of it and killed everyone with a heat ray and like interrupted the broadcast, like because the person recording it died, quote unquote. And then ultimately escalating to poisonous gas has been released on New York City and everyone is dying. And then they went to their first break. So the second half hour of the program was more conventional radio drama format following a survivor who was dealing with the aftermath of the Martians taking over planet Earth. And then ultimately the Martians were defeated not by the humans, but by microbes. 'Cause we don't do anything useful.
Yep. Except have diseases.
Yeah. So the program has got down in history as causing mass panic because people who tuned into it after the introduction didn't know that it was fictional. Now, the panic was exaggerated at the time by newspapers. So like modern researchers have basically figured out, okay, it wasn't as widespread a panic as legend has made it out to be. The program wasn't popular enough to cause that, but it still caused panic. Because people tuned in and were like, we're being attacked. So the interesting thing is, part of the reason that it did cause, like, a little bit of a mayhem is because not everyone understood it to be aliens when they were listening. They thought it was the Germans because World War II was about to start.
Oh, I did
World
not
War II
know
started.
That part.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I was reading about 1/3 of listeners who thought it was real, thought, World War II was starting. Because World War II started, this was October 1938. It officially started September 1939.
Oh,
so it was less than a year later. There had already been plenty of stirrings about war on the radio. So it's like, this is where they're hearing all these things about terrible stuff's happening around the world. And then it's like, yep, we're being attacked. And everyone was like, well, guess it's starting. But
that's crazy.
Yeah.
I never knew that part.
That's like real. That's like more scary.
Yeah.
Because if I was listening, I was like, aliens, I'd be like, are you sure?
But if it's like, the Germans have fired a cylindrical object.
I'd be like, well. So a lot of people called into the station, called into local newspapers, very frightened, asking if it was real. So there wasn't as much of like, people running out of their houses and losing their minds, as has kind of been reported. But a lot of people took the more logical, hey, is this true? And they were like, nah, it's not. But the police did arrive at the station to be like, hey, you guys gotta stop. Or you guys gotta make an announcement like right now that this is fake. And they were like, that's not in the script.
And Orson Welles is just like, you're ruining my creative vision.
Yeah, Orson Welles is like, I know what I'm doing.
He would.
Yeah. And then CBS got a lot of letters, a lot of complaints being like, hey, this was really misleading. And they're like, yeah, we see that now. our bad. And I was reading some quotes from Orson Welles where he's like, I didn't invent this way of storytelling. I just used it. I didn't think people would believe it. My bad. So then I discovered in reading a little bit about this today that 2 years after this, almost 2 years exactly, Orson Welles and H.G. Wells actually got to meet in
real
life. They got together for a radio interview, and the interviewer asked them, the interviewer was Charles C. Shaw. So this was the only time they ever met.
No relation to the Fantastic Beast Shaws, I take it.
I was gonna say, did you just say Shaw?
Yeah, Shaw.
It's all connected.
I don't know if Charles C. Shaw is any sort of like famous person from the time, but you know, if he was, wouldn't be surprised if Joe got the name from there. So he got them together. This is October 1940, so World War II has started in Europe. It has been over a year. So Shaw asked them about like the mass panic generated by War of the Worlds, and H.G. Wells said, and I quote, are you sure there was such a panic in America, or wasn't it your Halloween fun? And I'm like, wow.
Oh,
that's
good old H.G.
And Orson Welles thought this was funny, and he was like, I think that's the nicest thing that a man from England could say about the men from Mars. Mr. Hitler made a good deal of sport of it, you know. It's supposed to show the corrupt condition and decadent state of affairs in democracy that the War of the Worlds went over as well as it did. I think it's very nice of Mr. Welles to say that not only I didn't mean it, but the American people didn't mean it.
What is happening?
And then, God bless. When Shaw is like, well, there was some excitement, Orson Welles is like, what kind of excitement? Mr. H.G. Wells wants to know if the excitement wasn't the same kind of excitement that we extract from a practical joke in which somebody puts a sheet over his head and says, boo. I don't think anybody believes that the individual is a ghost, but we do scream and yell and rush down the hall, and that's just about what happened. And H.G. Wells said, you aren't quite serious in America yet. You haven't got the war right under your chins. And the consequence is you can still play with ideas of terror and conflict. It's a natural thing to do until you're right up against it. And then Orson Welles agreed and said, until it ceases to be a game.
Whoa.
I was like, whoa.
Mic drop. Although if they dropped their mics back then, they would have broken them.
Yeah. And probably Charles C. Shaw was like, all right, so... Anyway, aliens, am I right, guys?
Classic American approach. Aliens,
so yeah,
am I right?
That was really interesting. Yeah, right, guys? Let's not talk about that war, because America doesn't want to be a part of that yet. But yeah, I thought that was a really funny conversation. Very deep. I think Orson Welles and H.G. Wells were two pretty intelligent people.
Two bros chilling on the radio. I'm just going to leave it there. Y'all know the line.
Okay, so that's it for the time turner today. Just something interesting to start gearing us up for the 30s. We don't know when the next movie is going to take place, but we know that World War II is going to happen at some point in these movies. And
indeed,
it'd be awesome if World War of the Worlds also happened.
Just played on the radio.
What
in
if
the
War of the Worlds was actually like a cover for like Grindelwald attacking New Jersey?
Whoa,
that would
Why
be amazing.
Are they attacking Jersey though?
I don't know. Maybe Newt's in New Jersey.
I guess theoretically, I haven't read War of the Worlds, but I guess they attack New Jersey.
Well, I mean,
so that they can have access to New York.
It would be on par for the course because we didn't episode one. Was the Jersey Devil? Was that?
Yeah,
that was the beast we covered. So yeah, so Grindelwald is going to go to New Jersey because Newt is trying to take care of the Jersey Devil because it's not actually evil, and then they save the world. The end. Thanks, New Jersey.
All right. Cool.
You're welcome, Joe. We've written the next three films for you.
Okay, so moving on. Jennifer's got a Kowalski's Corner for us.
Woo-hoo. I do indeed.
I'm very excited about that.
As I said at the beginning, I own a wool shop, so I wool's kind of my thing. I enjoy wool, obviously. I was after like this, there was so much knitwear in Potter. I was expecting loads more from Fantastic Beasts. All we've seen so far is Newt's scarf. There's no other jumpers. I mean, come on.
A distinct lack of jumpers.
It's outrageous, really. They were quite, like, loads of people wore jumpers in the 20s. It was then a lot cheaper to make your own than to buy it, whereas now it's not really, but people just do it for fun. And a lot of their coats and things are made out of wool, but they're not wearing knitted jumpers, which makes me sad. And I hereby volunteer, WB, if you're listening to this, I will knit your jumpers for you. Please let them wear jumpers. I really also want, I think Eddie Redmayne has to wear a Feral tank top. I mean, it's the 20s. They were all in the fashion then, and they look amazing. Also, I think Newt would definitely knit his beast's tiny jumpers, and we need that.
Yes!
That has
now
to happen.
I'm picturing baby Nifflers in jumpers, and it's just
in
giving
tiny
me
jumpers.
Life.
Imagine this. Newt is in a jumper. He definitely knit it himself. You pan over, you see the Niffler in a matching jumper.
Oh man, that'd be
over.
So.
You see the bow chuckle
adorable.
In a matching tiny jumper.
Oh my gosh.
You just keep. We see the Debbie guys, but he's invisible, but you just see the jumper.
What if Newt did one of those, like, holiday cards, and it's just like all of him and his beast in
yes.
matching jumpers? I'm gonna need someone to do that fan art immediately.
Yes.
That's adorable.
They should have jumpers. Take that Oscar away from Colleen Atwood.
Yep, she doesn't deserve it.
And
yeah, we need jumpers.
She knits sweaters.
Coats are out, jumpers are in.
Well, and like, the coats are very cool, but like, now everyone's worn a coat. That's so 1926.
And also,
let's move
on. Why are they wearing their coats at all times?
Also,
it's
that.
Just weird.
It's so true. Newt takes off his coat in the first movie every time he goes in the case.
True.
That's just mostly Newt with the coat in the first movie, and Graves, obviously, but his coat's, like, perfect. But then in the second movie, everyone's in a coat.
At all times.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's the climate like in Paris? Haven't been.
I don't know, but it's not winter anymore.
True. Isn't it, like, spring or something?
Yeah, the first movie takes place in December. So I guess if it's 3 months later, it's, like, March?
Yeah.
I guess it's still cold.
Coat cold though, because they were wearing woolen coats as well.
Would you say that it's
yeah.
jumper cold?
Oh, definitely. It's always jumper cold.
Yeah. Wear a jumper in the summertime. Like, live your life.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah, they could just walk around in jumpers and no coats and they'd be the perfect temperatures.
Yeah.
It's true.
All right. Well,
I co-sign this.
Yeah, me too. Stamp of approval.
Boof. That's the sound of the stamp.
That was beautiful.
So that's our show for today. So for the podcast question this week, we wanted to know, listeners, what conditions do you find that either you relate to or that you see in any of the characters we discussed or in the characters we didn't? Anything that you guys might have on that discussion, please feel free to share with us. We'd love to hear from you, so you can drop us an owl on social media or by emailing us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And you can also leave us a review on iTunes and tell us what you think. We think we're pretty shiny. We hope you do too.
Shiny, so much that the Nifflers like us.
Yep. 10 out of 10 Nifflers agree that we are a shiny podcast.
You should follow our social media outlets. I hear they're pretty cool. Some cool people work on them sometimes.
The very best memes.
Memes. Memes for days.
So many memes.
Also, I mean, other things, but
I'm it's here the for internet, the memes. You know? I'm going to be honest.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, and on Tumblr, speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can also, of course, drop us an owl on any of those lines, like Elena said. You should also check out our Patreon, patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. There's a really cool owl post project right now. If you sign up for the Thunderbird level before the 31st of January, I'm not going to explain it more. You got to go to patreon.com/speakbeastie and find out. But that's basically where you can donate to us, help us make the show even better. And, you know, if you join our highest level, you can join our Speak Beastie common room, which is the coolest place to hang out.
It really is, though.
Yeah. I'm Shannon.
I'm Elena.
And I'm Jennifer. Case closed.